News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning, y'all. It is about 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. FM Talk 106.5. I am Dan Brennan. He is Dalton Arwig. On the way, lots of great local talk, including Jeff Ford beginning at 9 o'clock. And then Sean Sullivan, Midday Mobile, straight up at noon. It's can't-miss radio, I'd have to say, all day long if you want to know what's going on locally.
Amen.
So, yep.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I just want to let you know that we're efforting the mayor of the Daphne mayor's race, Robin Lejeune, and hopefully we'll have him on this hour to get his vision for his city, as he now will be the mayor when he is sworn in. a councilman, he's the president of the council right now.
Mm-hmm.
And in any event, also more on Hurricane Delta, with the track now kind of bending further to the west. You will hear from Dr. Bill Williams in a moment.
Yeah, this segment of the show brought to you by our friends at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey Bennett, a good friend of the station, and his crew at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They do great work in both Mobile and Baldwin counties. And if you're unfamiliar with how 1-800-GOT-JUNK works, well, it's very easy. It's right there in the name. If you have a bunch of junk and you don't know where to take said junk, or if it's too much or too heavy for you to physically move it, or sometimes, and I've had this happen, it's stuff that I consider junk, and maybe computer screens, TVs, you know, a lot of electronics, you're not sure whether you should safely dispose of it or throw it in the dump. Well, if you call 1-800-GOT-JUNK, they know what to do with that stuff. And also, if you have stuff that's donatable, but you don't have the time or want to put in the effort to donate that stuff, the crew at 1-800-GOT-JUNK will parse through and make sure that the stuff that's still usable will be given to people that can actually use it. And very easy to set up an appointment and get yourself an appointment time. They don't give you the big 6-hour, 9-hour range of when they may show up. So you go to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or call 1-800-GOT-JUNK, set up your appointment, and they'll be there exactly when you expect them. Another thing I love about the company, the price you get quoted is the price that you'll pay. The 1-800-GOT-JUNK, locally owned. They do great work in both Mobile and Baldwin counties. Everyone that I know that's called 1-800-GOT-JUNK have nothing but glowing reviews, including just about everyone right here at FM Talk 106.5. So once again, to get a quote and set up an appointment, call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or go to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Another locally owned company, locally owned franchise that is closely aligned with FM Talk 106.5. I really love that. And more and more that I listened to FM Talk 106.5 when it became apparent that I was going to be part of the team. Amazing to me how many local businesses see the value in getting their word out on this radio station.
Yeah, no doubt. And I don't know if you'll get this with every company, but with so many people that work with us here at FM Talk 106.5, we consider them friends. Known a lot of them for a very long time, and that includes Trey Bennett and 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Pretty cool. It's 10 minutes after 8 o'clock, and as you know, yesterday, getting way ahead of the curve, Governor Ivey issued a state of emergency, working with local leaders in Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, Dauphin Island, and the unincorporated areas of Ono Island and Fort Morgan. It has been determined that all visitors and tourists should proceed with a mandatory evacuation of the Alabama Gulf Coast starting first thing this morning. As she put this out, of course, it was tomorrow morning. This is for their safety and well-being, as well as for the safety and well-being of locals who are working to prepare their community in the event of Hurricane Delta, and if it tracks more easterly. So anyway, right now we don't think that's going to happen. That's the good news for us. Of course, it's never good news for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way these hurricanes work out.
You almost feel bad.
Yeah.
Some don't. But you almost feel bad wishing that it hit somewhere else on the American mainland rather than where you are, because you know that someone else is going to be going through what you're hoping to avoid.
Well, to those listening online in Louisiana, you know, I wish it would hit Italy. I don't want it to hit you.
Yeah.
But we don't want it to hit us, and we've been so ravaged by what just happened a couple of weeks ago with Sally. We still got a lot of recovery and a lot of cleanup to do.
And I think it's an interesting move from the governor's office to issue a mandatory evacuation for this storm, Hurricane Delta, because there was no mandatory evacuation for Hurricane Sally, and kind of a similar situation almost, but we were certainly more in the cone of Hurricane Sally before the storm showed up. Now, we were still on the eastern side and weren't completely sure that we would get hit by Hurricane Sally. Of course, things changed there towards the end, and it moved even farther eastward. But no mandatory evacuation then from the governor's office. She gets ahead of it yesterday by having that evacuation ordered then.
Living and learning in Montgomery. More on the track of the storm, Dr. Bill.
Right now, the center of Delta is over the northeastern portion of Yucatan. It was up yesterday to 145 miles per hour, has decreased. It may have gone through an eye wall replacement cycle in which a new eye wall forms, the old one dissipates, and when that happens, the intensity drops down. But now, of course, it's over land, but in a short time, it will be over the Gulf of Mexico, and it will most likely increase in intensity again. And we'll continue to track to the northwest. We now expect tomorrow that it'll be over the western, or let's call it the west central Gulf of Mexico, and making a turn to the north. And it will move back up to a major hurricane, possibly up as possibly a Category 4, around 130 miles per hour. It'll be making that turn, and then on Friday, it now looks like it will move into Louisiana, and right now we're looking at late afternoon on Friday, and it should make landfall about midway on the Louisiana coast, and then track up into southwestern Mississippi very early Saturday morning, and then continue to track up through Mississippi and then into Tennessee on Sunday. So the hurricane force winds will be confined pretty much to Louisiana, over fairly close to and possibly just touching New Orleans. And in our area, if the storm does move into central coast of Louisiana, we can expect some gusty winds for Friday and Saturday, mainly gusts up around 35 or 40 miles per hour. And most of the time in the range of 25 to 30. And we will expect some showers on Friday and Saturday, possibly heavy showers at times, and we'll likely pick up at least a couple of inches or maybe a little more than that of rainfall during the passage of the storm. Now, the storm, as it moves through Louisiana, will be moving a lot faster than Sally. Right now it's up around 17 miles per hour and probably will be close to that as it moves through Louisiana and then into Mississippi. So that cuts down on the amount of rain, and it also means the duration of those stronger winds will be much shorter. But right now, we don't expect any hurricane-force winds in Mobile. We may see some gusts up around hurricane force in the New Orleans area, but most of the real strong winds will be over in central Louisiana.
That is our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, about a half hour ago.
Yeah, and thankful that that storm is tracking west. Of course, if you're smart, you're preparing for Hurricane Delta as if it's going to come straight to our area. And I know a lot more people after Hurricane Sally are certainly in preparation mode, even if you don't think that it's going to head our way. But part of that, you know, we're still cleaning up from Hurricane Sally. And Dan, you mentioned last hour that Baldwin County, they said it's going to be months before they get all of that debris picked up there.
It was one more reason, like we have to come up with reasons we don't want a hurricane to come our way.
Yeah.
One more reason, though, obviously, is that we have so many exposed properties and holes in roofs and, you know, debris everywhere. Speaking of that, here in Mobile, in an effort to expedite the collection of debris left over, I guess they're about 50% done.
Trying to
lift it off the lawn, right?
Yeah, Mayor Stimson said 50% of the estimated 381,000 cubic yards of trash and debris have been removed.
Okay, so now if you've got, all right, the bagged debris that I have on my lawn is probably 4% of what's out there, the little bags. But anyway, I can lessen the load on my lawn by taking my 4%. And so you can do the same thing. If you have bagged debris, the city of Mobile has set up these drop-off locations for bagged debris, and they're going to be open from 8 to 4 the next couple of days, next 3 days.
Yeah, starting tomorrow.
Let's see. No, October 7th. So that is today?
That is today. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. So starting today at 8 a.m.
So we've got one that's down by Texas Street. I guess that's the park at Texas Street. It used to be called Texas Street Park. I think they've got another name for it now.
Oh, yeah, James Seals Community Center on Texas Street. And then the other one there at Langan Municipal Park on Ziegler. Now, that is a debris drop-off site at Langan. But also, if you're preparing for this storm, you can get sandbags filled at Langan beginning today. And the mayor last night saying citizens will be able to fill their own sandbags there at Langan Park. And they will have some bags available for citizens, but those supplies are limited. So if possible, bring your own bags to fill with sand, and it is self-service. They're not going to have someone out there pouring it for you, and it'll be operational the same hours as the drop-off sites for bagged yard debris, so from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. Now through Friday. Also, there's a location in Foley where you can get sandbags filled. That's at the Public Works Department beginning today at 6 a.m. until 4 p.m., and they're still picking up garbage in Foley. Just at the same schedule that they were planning on originally. And then in Escambia County, Florida, they've got about 9 different places where you can fill bags with sand. Of course, right now it doesn't look like the storm is tracking into our area, but you can never be too prepared.
No, you can't be too prepared, and we certainly learned that with Sally. But listen, anyway, Dr. Bill says, to the best of his prognostications, this is going to be a central Louisiana landfall late Friday afternoon. And I will say, let's check that box and say, we'll take that, right?
Amen.
It is 817 FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, and Mobile Mornings. Good morning. It is Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig at 823 on FM Talk 106.5. More on the track of Hurricane Delta and its impacts on our area of the Gulf Coast. It's on the way. Right now, the latest cone, I guess you would say, advisory, and the words of Dr. Bill Williams leave us rather confident that this is going to be a storm that's more than likely going to be a Louisiana event as far as the eye of the storm, and also central Louisiana, west of New Orleans, as opposed to east of New Orleans, we were thinking yesterday. So for us right here, that is more favorable news. So more on that on the way.
Yeah, and if you want to know about hurricanes that are heading towards the U.S., I'd say for me it's a two-step system. First thing I do is listen to Dr. Bill Williams. He gives us the most accurate forecast every time. Second thing I do is check the flight logs for Jim Cantore from the Weather Channel, because wherever Cantore ends up, they end up getting hit pretty hard by whether it's a hurricane or a tornado or flooding.
That rascal is disliked all across this country. It's not his fault, but he's disliked when he shows up all across this country. Though I kid about that. He was, let's see here, it was, remember the twister that came through and whacked Murphy High School?
Yes.
About 5-6 years ago or so. And he was on the ground right there. My son Joseph went down for our radio interest and took pictures of the debris, wreckage, whatever you want to call it. And Cantore was there. It looked like he was late for a math class. He's walking the campus of Murphy and was actually a very, very engaging guy, very nice guy.
Well, I think people love watching Cantore on TV, except when he's in your backyard.
Yeah.
And now with the storm apparently heading towards Louisiana, I thought this was funny. Yesterday on the Lake Pontchartrain Causeway in New Orleans, you know, they have those digital billboards that they put over the causeway, and we've seen them on so many different highways and interstates, and they can change the wording of that, obviously. But they put on their digital billboard there on Lake Pontchartrain, Jim Cantore, stay home, with an exclamation mark. And Cantore saw that on social media and tweeted, where's the love? So everyone loves watching Cantore, but no one wants to come to town. And I saw, and not just in New Orleans, but all across the Gulf Coast, people saying, don't come to our area, Cantore.
Can you imagine, though, seriously, the free meals that that guy's gotten through the years, because he's such a celebrity, and he's really likable. And you know, I could just see him sitting at grandmother's tables around areas that are receiving storms, or getting not having to pay at any restaurant in any town that he goes to when he's there. It's kind of like, oh, it's Cantore, man. We got to take care of him. He's here to try and help us.
Yeah, he's a good dude and a good family dude. If I remember correctly, I think Sean had him on Midday Mobile one time. Sean might correct me. I think I remember Cantore came on, but
I think he's pretty accessible. You know, I don't think he doesn't act like a big shot.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, speaking of accessibility, yesterday some very important elections in our area, and weekend. We've all been talking about the November 3rd general election, where, of course, the presidential race will be decided, and the Senate race here in Alabama between Tommy Tuberville and the junior senator, sitting Senator Doug Jones. But yesterday, some municipal elections in our area, and we've been talking some about the Daphne mayoral race. And Robin Lejeune actually had the largest margin of victory of anybody that won their race yesterday. Lejeune gets 63% of the vote to Steve Carey's 36% of the vote, 37% of the vote, really, for Carey. So Lejeune won that one going away for the Daphne mayoral race. In Spanish Fort, the incumbent mayor, Mike McMillan, defeated challenger Rebecca Cornelius. McMillan got 58% of the vote to Cornelius's 42% of the vote. Also, the Pritchard mayoral race here in Mobile County, the incumbent mayor Jimmy Gardner also won that race. He got 59% of the vote compared to Lorenzo Martin's 41% of the vote. And then the other mayoral race yesterday in Chickasaw, Barry Broadhead defeated William Vallon. That was the closest of the races, 54% of the vote to Broadhead and 46% of the vote to William Vallon. So lots of important races decided yesterday, and I just think it's so important to turn out to these local elections, because that has so much to do with your day-to-day life. Although the big topics of discussion are always the national stuff, what's going on with President Trump, what's going on with Joe Biden. But I believe on a day-to-day basis, nothing affects you more than your local politicians.
Yeah, and the Pritchard mayor race, I mean, look at a lot of the problems that are confronting the citizens of Pritchard. You really want to have a handle and know who the leader of that city is, mm-hmm. because they've got a lot of concerns there. They have infrastructure problems. They just, you know, a lack of money in the bank, and a town that really needs, probably of any city around here, they're in need of great leadership as much as anybody.
Yeah, and you know, we've been talking a lot about the potential for voter fraud going into that November election.
I heard something about that.
There was at an actual polling place in Pritchard yesterday, I guess they fired a poll worker for, they're saying, tampering with someone's vote there in Pritchard. This citizen of Pritchard who went to this polling place to vote, they say, according to my NBC 15, this citizen complained to management at the polling location. They looked into it. They said after close examinations, city officials fired that poll worker. And they released a statement from the mayor's office, said the poll workers are hired by the Secretary of State and trained accordingly. The incident that occurred this morning was summarily handled, and the poll worker was removed per Alabama's poll worker guidelines. The mayor's office said, I applaud the entire team from poll workers to poll watchers to law enforcement that efficiently and professionally helped to address the situation. So
he was appointed by John Merrill.
It almost seems like they're pushing it off on the Secretary of State's office.
He may get impeached over this. No, I'm only kidding. John is often a guest with Sean and also with Jeff in the middle of the day on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, but all the voter fraud talk has been about mail-in ballots. You don't often see something happen at an actual polling location. And
well, maybe during the debate, President Trump said, hey, go out there and keep an eye on the polls for me.
Watch closely.
Watch closely like not even a paid employee at the polls, but just kind of go and make sure there's no funny business.
Yeah.
I guess Donald Trump would say something like that. But so we had some funny business in Pritchard.
And I would say, as far as these stories go, the only thing worse than having to fire a poll worker for tampering with a ballot would be never hearing about the story at all and someone getting away with that.
I agree.
I'm sure that's a story nationwide, probably.
And I'd like more of the story. We know that something happened. There was a tampering. Who was tampering for who, I guess, would be the question, right?
Was that the first time of the day?
Yeah.
Did other people have their stuff tampered with?
Okay. It's 8:30 FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, and lots of news and information, including Dr. Bill, all straight ahead.
FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Oh, what's up?
Man, just making it. Having a great day here at FM Talk 106.5. But I want to know what's going on at the lot at McConnell Automotive. What do you have for us today?
Well, this does not have to do anything with the car business, but just want to congratulate Jean's daughter. She got elected to the city council in Saraland this week. And
awesome.
Yesterday, and he's going to be with a big old smile on today. So if y'all want a deal, go in there and tell him congratulations, I promise you he'll probably give a car away.
Now that's an insider tip right there. Not everyone gets that kind of information.
That's right. We're insider trading right now. But yeah, we got great deals going on at the store right now. We got $6,000 on those new pickup trucks with that fine old tailgate everybody's talking about. You can put a stereo system in it now, and it's just great. I mean, you can sit there and be at the beach, drop the tailgate, turn the radio on, and you can get the crowd running.
Yeah.
But we've got great deals on used cars. You can check those out at McConnellAutomotive.com. Also, if you got any questions, call Gene or I at 251-476-4141. Don't forget the body shop. Gary and the guys and the girls back there will take care of all your insurance needs. If you have that unfortunate wreck, just give them a call at 251-476-4141.
All right. We appreciate it, Louie.
Thank you.
That is the man, Louie Arata. You can go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Okay, 8:38, 22 away from 9 o'clock, and Jeff Poor's show starts a little after 9 on FM Talk 106.5. Then Sean Sullivan is in from noon to 2 with Midday Mobile. Okay, so we want to put our focus this segment on some national news, and, well, you know, yes, politics. Certainly the hurricane is not quite national news, but they're talking about it around the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Wildfires, of course, in California. The debate tonight. We can get to all that. But how about we start it out with this right here? Now, this is one of the... I'm reading the New York Times story about the passing of Eddie Van Halen. He passed away yesterday at the age of 65, gosh. Anyway, I'm not crazy about this writing from the New York Times. Eddie Van Halen, whose razzle-dazzle guitar playing...
Razzle-dazzle. Who wrote that?
Combining complex harmonics, innovative fingerings, and ingenious devices he patented for his instrument, made him one of the most influential guitarists of his generation, and his band Van Halen one of the most popular rock acts of all time. Yeah, he was only 65 years old.
What did a 98-year-old write that? The razzle-dazzle.
Razzle-dazzle fingerings of Eddie Van Halen, but in any event,
yeah,
a lot of folks are very familiar with the music and the career of Eddie Van Halen, but you told me something I didn't know about Michael Jackson.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the tragic story, and I guess Eddie Van Halen, he fought tongue cancer, which he was diagnosed with back in 2000, and it appeared that he had beaten that back in 2002, but eventually it was throat cancer that he succumbed to yesterday. And some really interesting stories, and, you know, it's bittersweet, but anytime a legend like Eddie Van Halen passes away, you hear stories that may have been passed around before, but a lot of times they don't make national attention until someone like that passes away.
Yeah, and sometimes it's deep in the obituary, right?
Yeah, exactly right. But I've known about this for a while now with the Michael Jackson song, Beat It. Have you heard that song? Beat It? I've heard of it before?
Yes, I have. Yeah, Michael Jackson, Beat It. I'm very familiar with that song. Thanks, Dalton.
Lots of razzle-dazzle.
You're not visiting somebody at the home. I'm right here with you. We're sharing a studio.
Lots of razzle-dazzle and Beat It. And,
yeah.
Of course,
almost too much.
Some would say too much. Yeah. And the guitar solo in that song was, of course, legendary, and it was the one and only Eddie Van Halen who cut that guitar solo for the Michael Jackson song, Beat It. And I did know of that, and I know a lot of people already knew that story. What I didn't know was that when Michael Jackson and Quincy Jones invited Eddie Van Halen to come along and cut that guitar solo for that track, Michael Jackson, apparently, when Eddie got there, he stepped out of the room. He had to go to another studio, and according to Eddie Van Halen, he said that he was recording like something for an E.T. box set that Michael Jackson was recording for. So he left Eddie Van Halen in the studio recording. Never leave him alone. And Eddie, instead of just cutting the guitar solo and getting out of town, he decided to rearrange the entire orchestration of the song. So he's talking there with Quincy Jones and talking with whoever else had hands on this song, Beat It, which of course ended up huge. And Eddie Van Halen sitting there going, what if you move this part over here and move this part over here?
Isn't that amazing?
And then he gets into the booth, only two cuts. He cut that solo for Beat It. And as he was wrapping up his second cut, Michael Jackson walks back into the room. Hello. You know, however he introduces himself when he comes in.
No, did Mickey Mouse join him?
And so Eddie says, you know, I hope you don't mind, Michael, but I rearranged your song that you're expected to be a big hit. And he didn't know whether Michael Jackson would say, you know, he hated it or get out of the studio right now. And Michael Jackson said, that's great. I love that you care enough about this product that you are willing to put some musical expertise on it rather than just come in and cut your guitar solo and leave. And Eddie Van Halen, you know, he was fine with that. His payment for the guitar solo on Beat It, 2 cases of beer.
1 case from Quincy, 1 case from Michael. You know, the other thing about that story that is pretty cool to me is that it shows the respect and maybe how genius understands genius. And I'm not even talking about Michael here in this case. Michael leaves the studio. He's left with Quincy Jones, genius in his own right.
Right.
And so the fact that he gets it past Quincy Jones, or Quincy says it's okay, that is amazing artistic respect one to the other, when you know they already had an idea of where that song was going to go. Now, you invite Eddie Van Halen in to do the guitar licks, you're subject for whatever Eddie is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant artist, and so just the fact that all these minds came together, Eddie took a shot, and Quincy Jones said, yeah, man, let's go for it. That's not what we were going for originally, but now it is.
I have a feeling if it was a Backstreet Boy that was in studio instead, they probably wouldn't have been okay with the rearrangement of the song.
He would have ended up on a security camera in a dumpster. Quincy, he would have been picked up by somebody in security and tossed out of there. But yeah, Eddie Van Halen, different story, man.
Yeah, no doubt about
that. What a career.
Yeah, just outstanding. And, you know, I didn't realize he came over from Amsterdam very early on in his life. 7 years old, he and his family, and his parents both just musical geniuses. That's where he and his brother Alex learned so much of what they knew. But definitely a legend that passed away yesterday. And here's that solo right here from, from Beat It. I guess we'll leave you with that, and we'll come back with Jeff Port, talk about some of the more national topics coming up.
How did I not know in the 80s, how did that one, someone tap me on the shoulder and say, hey, Brandon, you know what? And I'm like, yeah, why? Because that's how I talked back then. That's Eddie Van Halen on that Michael Jackson song. I would have blown some wires right there. FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig at 8:49, talking about the passing of Eddie Van Halen, the all-time great rock guitarist. George is on the line, has got something to say with that. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, I just had a story. Actually, I met him in 92, and me and my sister were over in New Orleans. I saw him in concert several times, but anyway, we were over in New Orleans, and we were walking down there where Tower Records was near. And you know how you always do that game where you're kind of like sitting there and you say, oh, that person looks like that person or whatever. Yeah. Well, I hit my sister on the arm and I said, hey, there, that guy's it. That's Eddie Van Halen. And we kept walking and didn't think anything about it. And then about 5 feet, maybe 10 feet behind him was Valerie Bertinelli. And I grabbed her on the arm and I said, Florence, that was Eddie, because there's Valerie.
Well, I thought you grabbed Valerie by the arm.
He was walking with a girlfriend, and evidently they had been in town to watch the Bills game. I guess they were friends with Jim Kelly or something, and that's what he told us at the time.
That is wild.
So we went running back up to him and got to talk to him.
That's great. Do you remember what you talked about at all? Were you just like, you know, what are you doing here?
Told him we were big fans, and, you know, and like how much we liked his music and everything. And he told us, you know, and I asked him, you know, why he was in New Orleans, and because obviously they weren't on tour or anything, and he, that's when he mentioned that they were friends with Kelly and had come in to watch the game.
So cool. That's
very
a great
cool
story. George, thanks for that story. That's really neat. Turning up your voice, and you can also text us 343-0106 as we begin to wind down Mobile Mornings this morning.
And the Jeff Poor Show on the way, and it's a Wednesday, so we thought we would drag Jeff Poor in here a little earlier to...
Kicking and screaming.
To talk,
I don't want to be on that show.
Talk about what the plan is for today's show and also get into some national politics and some state politics with the Senate race coming up. Jeff, good morning. Who do you have on today's show?
We got Tommy Gallion. All you longtime Feinbaum listeners will remember him from the whole Phil Fulmer, Alabama saga. But he's got a book out, Shadow Government, Southern Style. It's kind of interesting. Well, he's got some allegations against Doug Jones and others. I mean, it's very hard on Governor Riley. Talks a lot about the Siegelman and Scrushy episode, but also he was an eyewitness to a lot of what went on. It's a lot of you out there remember the Phoenix City story and how Phoenix City used to be this crime center for the Dixie Mob.
Dixie Mob. I lived in Columbus, Georgia, so I was very, very familiar with that.
Yeah, his father was an attorney general, and he saw a lot of what had happened in that area, but at the time. You know, he was alive then, and that talks about how he and his mom had to flee to Florida while they were working on that when everything just came crashing down when they had assassinated Albert Patterson, and John Patterson rises to fame, obviously, but he was involved with that, or he wasn't directly involved with that, but his father was involved with that. But that, and gambling in Alabama and the Porch Creek. So, interesting book. We'll get into it with him. That'll be a good interview. Also, my friend, my colleague from Breitbart News, Matt Boyle, still says Trump has a pathway to victory, to getting the delegates. He's going to walk us through this state by state, even what the polls say. The idea here is, though, the polls, national polls, aren't looking that great for Trump. And even some of the battleground states are not looking that great, but the media are highlighting the bad polls. And
right.
There's still reason to think North Carolina, Arizona even, is in play, and we're not really talking about that on that level. We got Alabama Policy Institute's Phil Williams. I'm going to talk to him about a bunch of things going on statewide, COVID mask ordinance, ABC stores, the usual gamut of state issues, and then we'll also talk about the debate last week. And then finally, as we do every Wednesday, Yellowhammer News' Sean Ross will be with us.
Outstanding. Sounds like another great Jeff Poor Show.
Did you know the story about that? And I guess it was in the 50s. The mob from Ohio and areas in the north would kind of deputize Southerners to kind of do their business and create kind of a mob town in different places in the south. Am I on point so far, Jeff?
Yeah.
And so there, I guess it was the Attorney General of the state of Alabama. Was it that who was...
So he wasn't Attorney General yet. So what had happened, there was an
election.
He
came to clean it up, though, right?
He was the elect. Or he had won the Democrat nomination to be Attorney General. And obviously in Alabama, the Republican law... Back then, Democrats always won.
Yeah.
And he was on his way to being the Attorney General. Well, they knew he was coming for the Phoenix City mob. They knew he was going to try to start prosecuting. Phoenix City in the 1950s, across the river, across the Chattahoochee River, was Fort Benning. And the way that worked was, you know, all the GIs would come over, they'd gamble, they'd hire prostitutes, drink or whatever. It was kind of the Sin City of the South at the time. When people started getting tired of it, and they elect... even people the rest of the state got tired of it, because that's what Albert Patterson had run on. While Albert Patterson wins, those guys, the local officials, the corrupt system machine in Phoenix City, kind of overreacts, freaks out, and they kill Albert Patterson.
On the courthouse steps. You talk about making a statement.
Yeah, well, and then his son, John Patterson, fresh back from World War II, or he was serving in Europe, I believe, he gets back and goes and runs for Attorney General, as you know, later becomes governor of Alabama, still living today, by the way. And that's when the National Guard comes in, and Governor Pearson says it's time to clean up. And this is all heading into that era of Big Jim Folsom. It's kind of a fascinating story about Alabama that you don't really think about.
Yeah.
There's a whole movie made about it.
Yeah,
it's worth watching.
And there were even tanks from Fort Benning, the legend told me, tanks from Fort Benning on the bridge that prevented, almost like a blockade, like the GIs, you cannot go over there anymore.
Wow. That's it.
Yeah.
They were always
insane.
They're either turning up, these GIs from Fort Benning would either turn up missing or
in the Chattahoochee.
They say there's, you got stretch of Chattahoochee River between Phoenix City and Columbus. There's still probably dead bodies at the bottom of it.
It's just an unbelievable point in history for not just this state, but that city and that area.
And it's something, Phoenix City after the Civil War kind of built itself as having that reputation.
Mm-hmm.
It had been that way since Reconstruction. And had been kind of this lawless part of Alabama right before you go over the bridge into Georgia. It was kind of a like a buffer zone between Alabama and Georgia, and they
it was ripe. It was ripe for what the mafia wanted to do, and they would go to towns like that and deputize the bad dudes. They were already bad dudes, I think. So it was kind of like you didn't have to convert them much, right?
Right.
You just had to bring them into your organization.
And it's like, it was their tactic. You could look all along the Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi, Tennessee state line, and that's where these little crime syndicates would set up shop, where they're kind of in that neutral zone.
Wow.
What an amazing story.
It's incredible.
Can't wait to hear more from that author later today. And tonight, of course, we've got the vice presidential debate. I don't know, you know, some people calling it the most anticipated vice presidential debate in a long time. To me, that seems to be, you know, any vice presidential debate that year would be the most important. But what are you expecting to see tonight? You think, you know, Kamala Harris will be the first black woman to debate in a vice presidential debate. What are we expecting out of Pence and Kamala tonight?
I think it's going to be very toned down compared to the presidential debate a week ago. Yeah. I mean, that's a very low bar, let's say.
Yes.
But it's not that neither one of those two's personalities. Right. But I think Kamala Harris will be aggressive like she was in that first debate.
With Biden. Yeah.
And she'll, let's face it, guys, she's kind of wants to make a name for herself.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that. I don't think she is quite the, there's a lot we can point to why she isn't the Democratic nominee. But it's clearly there's some ambition there. No doubt about it. And you get the opportunity to be on that stage with everybody, I think she's going to try to make the most of it.
Yeah, she'll be overcome with the opportunity and try to do something tonight.
Absolutely.
That we're all talking about tomorrow.
Well, relative to Biden, her political career just getting started. Now, a lot of people don't want to see it get started with a vice presidential handle. But
getting started on a national stage, right?
Interesting tonight.
Jeff Ford on the way next. FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig again tomorrow starting at 6 a.m.